Welcome to The Biz of Wealth, your source of fintech and wealth management inspiration. On each episode, we dive into the challenges, innovations, and creative strategies impacting those of us in this world. Let's jump right in.
Welcome to The Biz of Wealth. Today, I'm here with Noah Healy. Thank you, Noah, for joining me. Noah is a market designer and game theorist working on better economic systems. After training in nuclear engineering, he worked for tech startups at the peak of the dot-com boom, and he became fascinated by the mathematics of information and computation that led to patent work on a better commodity market design. Again, Noah, thank you for joining me.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me here.
Today, you know, I just read a mouthful and I want to go over your story. When we first met, we basically started going into all of the details of how you developed your product, how you came to it, and your passion behind improving the commodity markets. And what I want to do here is work with you on that story. And because every time I run into people, technical geniuses, as I call them, sometimes I like to work on them on how we tell that story so that everybody can relate to it, right? So I want to tap first into your passion. You said you became fascinated by the mathematics of information. What does that mean? What is it that you loved about it, and how did it pique your interest?
Well, what I've pretty much always been attracted to is very general tools. I like when the time that I spend learning something makes me better at everything that I'm doing, not just one specific thing that I'm doing. And information was the core was actually developed by the phone company or people working for the phone company to break down the human voice into packets that could be moved around on a network. But it has evolved through general computation, and the mathematics of how to describe information also describes mathematics itself. So as you dive into these techniques and get better at using them, you literally get better at thinking about these things, and you get better at applying these techniques to making you better at thinking about things.
Okay. So, and that's a path you followed to develop the product you developed in terms of improving the commodities market, right? So let's start little by little.
Sure.
How did you come to identifying the problem you see in the commodities market?
I identified the problems that I see in the commodities market after the design that I was working on, which I was attempting to approximate the capabilities of the commodities market, proved to be much more efficient. So I was building a system to do what markets do using a completely new technique. And my expectation was that that system would underperform, but have more general applications than markets usually have. What I discovered when I wrote the code is that it actually overperformed. And then I started applying this computational mathematics to the market structure. And that's when I discovered a wide variety of flaws that it turned out that my system repairs.
Okay, so let's go into more detail. What does that mean? What is it that, you know, you were working on something to trade the markets, basically? And then
actually, no, I had no particular interest in the markets. I had taken sort of econ, you know, intro, and one of the axioms of modern economics is that the markets are perfect systems. I had heard that from my college professors and was willing to accept that it's true. The problem comes in assumptions that are made within that statement, and those assumptions are pretty deeply embedded, and the proofs that are used don't go there. But modern markets actually violate those assumptions. So the old marketplace involved a group of people who had a common interest in the existence of a market, so they weren't just trying to kill each other, but they were all selfish. And so they were all attempting to profit off of the other players' behaviors. So if you were to engage in manipulative behavior within the marketplace and other people in the markets figured out that that's what you're doing, it would be possible for them to pull you back down. So it's sort of
basically, it's assuming that the market will take care of itself.
Yes. And it's assuming that it will take care of itself because the motives and capabilities of the participants make it possible for it to take care of itself. However, as we've introduced computers into the marketplace and broadened the stream of people that were engaged, those assumptions weaken. And at this point, they're basically gone. And so,
is that because computers don't take, you know, emotions or ethics into account?
That certainly doesn't help. But the worst problem is just the speed. Not only are computers moving faster than people, and so the speed aspect that a group could have, a group of people can do more things than a single person can, just because each member of the group could do a different thing. And that's what allowed the group of the marketplace to sort of tear down somebody that was behaving badly. But with computers, they move as fast as they move. So if you want to do as much as the marketplace itself does, all you need to do is sort of own as much computer power as they do. And since the markets can't afford to buy more than half of all the computer power on Earth and remain profitable, they don't do that. And the hedge funds can easily match the capability of what's going on in the marketplace. And so that capability that used to exist where people acting in their own interests could effectively team up against people acting counter to the general interest has disappeared. And so now acting counter to the general interest doesn't have the penalties that it used to have. And so it's become much more common.
Okay. So you were trying to solve for that assumption that does not apply anymore. And what did you find?
What I discovered is that by creating a system that measures information rather than actions, we create a scenario where our computers can actually participate in ways that are provably helping us. And because deal information evolves more slowly and requires human inputs to be meaningful, the entire system can stabilize in ways that existing markets cannot. And it can do so with thousandths of the data flow. So the existing markets you actually have about a petabyte or more of information that gets transmitted back and forth in their operations on a yearly basis. And this would operate in the megabytes range on a yearly basis.
Okay. So I'm going to go, you know, little by little. So at the present moment, we have people and machines competing in the market. And then the exponential capacity of machines bought by institutional clients. And those are other players in the market, both in the regular and the commodities one. I know you developed a system for the commodities one, but that works for all markets, I assume, right now.
Yes.
So in those players, what do you see is going to be the solution in a way? A lot of people will answer it's regulation that we need, right? But
That's certainly a popular rallying call. It's completely inappropriate. The issues at hand are much more fundamental than that. The market, in order to function, needs to have physical capacities that we can't, like, our understanding of physics doesn't allow markets that to exist in the way that they used to exist before computers. And so the regulations that would have to exist would have to deny computational access, machine computational access, to the entirety of the financial system. So your banker wouldn't be allowed to own a pocket calculator. And they'd basically have to live in the Middle Ages, while the rest of us were living in, the 21st century. I can't imagine that scenario functioning. And there's really no other way to rescue it, because the system depends on certain properties of space and time and thinking that are not reflected by our present understanding of reality.
Okay, let's go that down that route then.
Sure.
How is it that you identify all this? What was your thinking process? I know it's like we have these players that are sort of invisible to most, but that they are gaining a lot of importance and weight in the market.
Well, it helps, I think, that I had no interest in the financial system at all, and still don't have any interests in playing that game. So I was simply analyzing it from a systems and communication point of view. And when you do that, signals processing is a completely physical idea. Signals have to be physical in our universe. They're time dependent. And so ideas like Einstein's become important in figuring out what's going on. And also there's a computational component. Processing needs to happen. Decisions need to happen. Decisions can't happen in no time with no energy expenditure. There has to be some of each of those things. And when you look at a system based around the concept of first come, first serve, that is operating now in the microseconds, time slices, what you come to realize is that since computer systems are actually faster than microseconds, so the computer I'm talking to you on is capable of performing thousands of operations in a single microsecond. And so if within thousands of operations it is possible for a decision to be made that would harm the system as a whole, without harming me, then I can gain a competitive advantage on the rest of the people in the system by having that decision be made, because everyone else will be harmed and I won't be. And in a straight competitive system, hurting other people is the same as helping yourself, which is pretty horrifying when you come down to it. So once you understand that that's true, then you take a look at the sorts of news items that we see regularly being produced over the last several decades. And it becomes quite obvious that that is, in fact, whether intentional or unintentional, I believe that it's mostly unintentional. That's been the evolutionary direction of most strategic involvement
What do you
by.
mean about the news cycle? Where are you going there?
Well, consider the various financial crashes and scandals
Oh,
since the
that's it.
late 80s. that have been happening with increasing frequency. When we hear about sort of crazy bubbles, the tulips and the, the South Seas bubble that even Newton, bought into, and, a few others, the railroad bubble and so on. But, we had a flash crash in the late 80s. We had a pretty serious financial, crunch in 1997, long-term capital management. We had a bubble crash in 2001. We had another one in 2008. We've had flash crashes, with increasing frequency, and if you look at single issues, daily frequency for more than a decade now. We're looking at markets that are behaving historically badly on a day-to-day basis. That's not a good thing.
But wait, playing devil's advocate here, right? Like, markets are supposed to swing.
They are in fact supposed to swing in their current incarnation in order to function. Yeah. However, the thing that is supposed to cause them to be governable is the fact that as they swing out of band, it becomes profitable for the people to sort of blow off steam by metaphorically cutting the throat of the person that's gotten out of hand and pulling the market back into center, and then the pendulum swings some other direction and you pull that back and so on. However, what we're seeing, particularly with computer algorithms fighting with other computer algorithms, is that both halves of that don't function as well as they used to. Both the process of having companies fail because they've gone too far out on a ledge has gone away, and the process of pulling things back to the center without some kind of falling off the cliff catastrophe has gone away. And those are both predictable outcomes of a control system that doesn't have a functioning feedback mechanism. And that's exactly what we broke with our marketplaces when we decided to start communicating with each other faster than human thought.
So basically, computers are connected to each other. They're interacting with each other, but we have no way of stopping whenever any of the behaviors of the computers are hurting the overall marketplace.
Yes, and even worse, in most cases, when a computer you own is hurting the overall marketplace, it is making you personally money doing so.
Right. Right.
Whereas historically, how is that different on average,
from the richest man in the market with human speed buying as much product as he wants or she wants? And then the biggest player in the market developing the fastest computer and the fastest algorithm, or even the artificial intelligence for controlling the market.
So, well, you're describing reality. So Lloyd Blankfein, right, or is it, I can't remember his name, but the guy at BlackRock, the Aladdin system is the most publicly advanced AI algorithm for market trading / manipulation. And that is the cornerstone of the BlackRock multi-trillion hedge fund, universe. And that's precisely what they did. He got an enormous amount of money together and uses that to manipulate the marketplace. And we can see the deleterious effects across multiple industries and the marketplace itself.
But you're presenting it as if it was a bad thing when at the end of the day, it's the same way markets have always worked, which is the strongest and or the richest player is controlling the market.
That is, in fact, not the case. So, as I mentioned, with some of those previous bubbles, those were the result of some very bizarre and prolonged bad behavior by the most powerful and wealthiest members of the marketplace. But they were able to go too far. And when they did go too far, they were in fact ruined because the system snapped back. Now it's perhaps better to have a system that's even more stable than that and does not force ruin upon your wealthy people attempting to control everything. But our markets have largely lost their capacity to enforce that kind of discipline.
Like to be democratic, basically. What are you saying?
I'm
uncomfortable
with
access to all in a way.
In the terms of my profession, the algorithm doesn't scale. So it is fairly easy to make a search bar for your local company like website. You can do it by hand. You can, you know, have key terms or something and have a link page or just some other fairly simple pattern match that will do that. It is significantly more difficult to build a internet search engine that functions even remotely plausibly. And to do so at a scale better than present internet search is very, very challenging indeed. The same thing goes for the markets. Markets, when they involved several dozen players who were interested, did pretty well. And when they then, as mass communication started with telegraphy, and those several dozen sort of powerful guys in some particular city were answering to tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of retail players, that brokerage system ran fairly decently. But now that they're operating with hedge funds and sort of, you know, there's more hedge funds than there are individual issues of stock, the ecosystem has turned itself upside down, and we now have a scenario where there's more sharks than minnows, and the system is destabilized.
So how do you propose to stabilize it and make it accessible to all, or at least that everybody has some sort of weight into it?
Well, comes down to my price discovery mechanism. Effectively, once again, using information theory, I found a way to measure deal information and allow speculators, rather than making speculative deals on their own behalf, to negotiate group deals on everybody's behalf that everyone can either opt into or opt out of, depending on whether or not it meets their needs on a timed interval. And so what this does is completely changes the relationships and interests of the parties at hand, and also radically lowers the cost of entry to the market and radically increases the rewards that accrue for interfacing with the market in ways that help other people. And also,
let's start from the beginning again.
Sure.
The system allows for players to build their offering in a way.
That's the trick. You're not building your offering, you're building the offering. There's an offering. So for a given commodity that will be traded on a given day, there's a given deal.
Let's put a specific example. Let's use one commodity, whichever you want.
Right. So let's say we're going with the biggest one in the world. Let's say we're trading oil and we're curious about oil trade on a specific day. Well, how much will oil be traded for on that day? in the existing marketplace, there will in fact be an average number that is accomplished over the day, but the actual number will jitter all over the place, up and down. And the individual suppliers and demanders will be incredibly antsy about being on the wrong side of those jitters, and that's they will take deals that are on average worse than what the average actually is for that day in order to not necessarily get the worst deal that's actually available in those jitters when they make their deal. So what my system says is, first off, forget all that. There's going to be a deal for the day. We just need to figure out what it is. And so
who establishes that price, that deal for the day?
That's what the negotiation is about. So starting from weeks, months, even years out, people can contribute their guesses about what the deal terms are going to be for that particular day. And what I can do is measure how much information is in those deal terms and integrate that information together. So rather than having one person say, oh, the price of oil tomorrow is going to be $78 or it's going to be $28. Instead, hundreds, thousands, even millions of people over the course of weeks, months, or even decades can all have contributed that price incrementally and come to a common consensus that they have effectively all agreed to. And then
how does supply and demand work in this scenario?
Right. That's exactly what I was about to get to. Then that deal is presented to supply and demand, and they can choose to opt in or opt out. And if the deal is what, in fact, the daily average would have turned out to be, then the opt-in and opt-out will be what they were, what they would have been in a scenario where each deal had to be made individually, except because it's one deal across everything, the total cost differential, the amount of money paid and the amount of money actually received by the deliverer are smaller and larger respectively than what happens with the existing system, where each party is working with middlemen to try to keep themselves from getting the worst of the jitter.
So if I were, let's say, in my mind, I'm going back to the original Middle Ages marketplace. Let's call it that. Right. Let's set ourselves in there and say, okay,
The Middle Ages is when the current market was developed. So it's a perfectly fair description.
So I come here and I say, every day in the Middle Ages, I would come and say, okay, my crop is $5, whatever. And every day I sell it for $5. But, you know, the next day, the next season, I see that, you know, I'm going to be short. So I need to, you know, make up the difference. And I'm going to be short because there was a change in the weather. So I want to make up the difference and I'm going to go and say, no, it's $7. What you're right. saying is today I'm going to commit to sell it for $6.
Wrong. You're not going to commit. You're going to guess.
I'm going to guess I'm going to be selling for $6.
You're going to guess that everybody's going to be selling for $6.
Okay. And once
it's
I
get, not, once you get there,
yeah.
Once you get there, that's when you'll find out what everybody actually, what the result of everybody's guesses actually were. Maybe it's $6, maybe it's $5, maybe it's $7. It's the aggregated result. And it's not just for one day.
But aggregated the average?
It doesn't quite work out to that way. It effectively aggregates to the median, because in a supply-demand scenario, you basically want equal numbers on both sides. So you wanted to keep it simple. I can describe the calculus.
But... no. So let's do it this way. So, okay, you get the median. Perfect. But you're saying we can do it decades in advance.
So
how does it update?
So the present we can't change, because that's not how the present works. But the future we can change. So you're talking about, you know, you're out there on the farm and the weather's not so good. So you're thinking, okay, things have to get more expensive. Well, in my system, rather than sort of worrying about that, or maybe going in and finding the best deal that you have to pay for, or whatever, you would go into this guessing system and you'd say, well, the weather's not great where I am. So to me, I think prices are going up because probably weather's not great, you know, at my neighbor's place or other places too. So I'm going to be able to make money by guessing well, by letting everybody know that prices are going up. So you can guess next season's days and the season after that and the season after that, if you think that in addition to bad weather, maybe there's climate change, or in addition to bad weather, maybe there's inflation or something else that's going to cause prices to go up. And so this every day, there's a new opportunity for people to guess about the deals that haven't happened yet. So a deal a year from now can have everybody's input 365 times, and everybody can see what everybody's first guess was, second guess was, third guess was, up to 364. So that's a very well negotiated, very tight, very correct number that comes out of that.
And what nowadays, and what we're trying to do, what role do computers play then?
Well, if computers can do useful data analytics, so if you come up with a very strong AI system that can scan global temperature regimes, read newspapers at hyperspeed, whatever, and come up with very accurate future guessing, then you will be able to use those computers to provide those very accurate guesses to the marketplace in general. And those numbers that we're talking about will become more accurate more quickly, which will allow you on your farm, perhaps the bad weather was predictable because it was some sort of climatic shift, and rather than you having bad weather and seeing that your prices are going to have to go up, maybe the year before it even happens, prices are already trending up because they're aware that the microclimate that you're engaged in has, you know, the new, you know, gap they tore in the mountains so that the train can go through or whatever is going to change the way farms work in the Midlands. And now prices are going to have to go up. And so you'll get to see that happening without having to experience it yourself. And you can plan your business accordingly.
Wow. Okay. What needs to change in the marketplace for you to be able to implement that system?
All that really needs to change is I need partners to help implement that system. So
isn't it the case that everybody would have to buy into the market, into that, or not?
Certainly not everybody. The system doesn't operate by itself. It would require some degree of initial participants. But again, to put some sort of rough numbers on things, there are hundreds of thousands of independent farms in rice, corn, and wheat each. And this system will equilibrate with roughly 50 participants at a rate and accuracy that exceeds current market overhead costs. So hundreds of thousands, 50, even if they're not dedicating themselves fully to switching, just sort of keeping a finger in and pushing something out, you could get rolling with commitments on the orders of fractions of a percent of an existing marketplace. And because you will rapidly demonstrate a lower cost system, the rest of the party will come along when it becomes clear that they can make a lot more money by doing so.
Which commodities markets are you going to start with?
That's the basic challenge. I'm still searching around for that. I had an intriguing thing recently. I'm talking to somebody about currency remittances, but we'll have to see if that goes. There's some people that are trying to build a coffee index, and some other people trying to build a coal index in different parts of Africa. And basically, I need partners who can actually set up markets, the regulatory requirements, and partnerships and connections are something that I don't have the wherewithal to pursue. So I'm pursuing people who can pursue those things. It's unfortunately a little indirect, but it's all I can afford.
So what do you think is the key to innovation? You know, you have a very innovative mind, and you know, everybody's always looking to find that, you know, secret sauce.
I think the key to innovation is looking at what's in front of your face. The amount of paradigm shifting change that happened during the 20th century is such that it's not very convincing that we're doing anything particularly well. So if you want to innovate, take a look at whatever it is that you want to innovate around and study until you realize what's fundamentally broken with it. And then try to figure out how to fix that thing. And then go forward from there. I was not trying to fix marketplaces. I was trying to fix internal corporate communication and project management when I was working on my problem.
How was that? Tell me, how did you run into it then?
Well, so I've worked for a pretty large number of companies that ultimately made decisions that were contradicted by files on their own computers. The management was like, we're going to do X. And subsequently, it was discovered that when they made that decision, there was a file somewhere that, if you read it correctly, basically said doing X will cause the company to stall or go bankrupt. And nobody had done that before they made that decision. So I was thinking about how would you be able to create a system where computers could communicate with human beings in a useful fashion. And I was thinking about that both in terms of the companies I'd worked with and also advancements in drone and sensor technology and AI, where we were going to have a lot more computers communicating a lot of stuff that we couldn't keep up with. How would we manage and corral these data torrents? And so I came up with this mechanism for designing systems that came up with these stabilizing agreements. And then, in order to mostly play with it, but to some extent demonstrate that this system could have some utility, I applied it to marketplaces in the assumption that if a marketplace built off this idea performed even in the ballpark as well as something that has centuries of performance data, extraordinary confidence, and once again, is known and taught to be perfect, then that would be a strong validation. And what I discovered is that this approach is actually more powerful than that approach.
That's awesome. So to close, we're running out of time, but I want to know, you know, what's next? If you had a magic wand and could make everything come true in the next year, what would the system and your next project would look like?
Well, what the system would look like would be a considerable calming of the sort of global economic strains that we keep seeing, you know, stories coming out about the financial system, and a period of greatly increased economic growth across the productive sector of the economies of pretty much every country in the world, almost has a pretty decent agricultural, and most of them have fairly decent mining sectors as well. And so pretty much everybody that wanted to have a stronger economy would have a radically stronger economy. For me, I have a sort of a couple of little, you know, nagging thoughts. Probably the one that irritates me the most is a discrepancy between the algorithmic efficiency of multiplication in Euclidean geometry versus symbolic systems like computers. And I would very much like to have the time and energy to focus on that problem instead of trying to acquire enough of a revenue stream to be able to maintain my lifestyle.
I love that. Thank you so much, Noah. Thank you for your time and for all this conversation. It was inspiring.
Thanks again for having me here. This was great.